You shared some of the most wonderful stories about the Queen Mary during the two tours I've taken with you this afternoon. I wish you'd share one of your favorites now.
Well, I have many, many favorite stories about the Queen Mary. And just to pull one out of my hat, it's a little bit difficult to do. I love the entire history and legacy of the two-ship service. The very idea behind the Queen Mary and Queen Elizabeth to have a weekly service with two ships. The two ships were different. I mean, I said that in the beginning. One had two stacks, the other three. They were sisters, but not twins. And their legacy in war, where the two ships carried 1,500,000 troops in the pursuits of freedom, I think is just stunningly fascinating. The fact that in 1943, the Queen Mary carried more human beings in one vessel in history and has never been surpassed, and that was 16,683 troops. I love how, at the end of the war, that Winston Churchill was quoted as saying the Queens had challenged the furies of Hitlerism in the Battle of the Atlantic. And surely without their contribution, the final day of victory in Europe would have been postponed indefinitely. I like his words that the Queens had shortened the war by up to a year by their ability to deliver the troops and the goods. That story in War and Peace is fascinating. And I attribute my own life to the Queens because my father arrived in Frankfurt, Germany in August 1945, not long after it was over. And had the Queens not been able to shorten the war by a year, he might have been shot and I wouldn't be here to share anything with anybody. And I'm sure that the ships have affected millions of lives that way. And just the very fact that they were the fashion of the Atlantic and the way the two ships would sometimes sight one another at sea and the dining rooms and the lounges would empty out as everyone would crowd the decks and wave handkerchiefs and life rings and anything that they could as the ships would veer toward one another as almost to if embrace and the whistles would sound out. And what a beautiful thing to see two giant sisters racing past one another, indifferent to anything else in the world. And of course, the fact that the Queen Mary has outlived all of her contemporaries and that she is the last and final and best example of the golden age of ocean travel is a testament of the very lucky ship that she truly is. She outlived a depression. She outlived a world war. She outlived the jet age. She outlived the breaker's hammer. And she continues to thrive. She's never been more popular than she is today. We're seeing 1.5 million guests every year, 50 million since we've opened in 1971. It's just like the prediction by the psychic lady Mabel Fortescue Harrison. The Queen Mary carried 2.2 million in peacetime, 810,000. Since we've opened up the 50 million, and Lady Mabel Fortescue Harrison predicted the day the ship was launched in 1934. She said, most of us will be gone when this takes place. But the ship called the Queen Mary, launched today, will know her greatest fame and popularity when she never sails another mile or carries another fare-paying passenger. And I believe that this ship is living that prediction. And I think that she is something that all Southern Californians can be proud that is in their neighborhood, but especially the city of Long Beach. A lot of the development along the Ocean Boulevard, it's all created to look out at the Queen Mary. And of course, we have the beautiful view to look across and see it, but they have the best view.
They certainly have. What are some of the things that visitors to the Queen Mary will see today that reference the history, especially the two sister ships to which you just referred?
Oh, well, you know, if you go down into the Grand Salon, if you take our Glory Days tour, the Glory Days takes you through all the public rooms, like the Queen Salon, which is the first class main lounge, the Grand Salon, which was the first class main restaurant. Well, in the Grand Salon, there's a giant mural of the North Atlantic that's sort of a bas-relief and gilt and gold, and it has crystal ships on a track. And each one is one queen, and the Queen Elizabeth and the Queen Mary. And it was sort of a 1936 interpretation of what we have in GPS today. They would keep pace with the ship's progress across the North Atlantic. And that piece of art sums it up. And that room is probably one of the largest rooms ever installed in a ship. And you could put all three of Columbus ships in there at one time, the Nina, the Pinna, and the Santa Maria, plus the first Cunard paddle steamer, Britannia, It's truly a colossal chamber. The entire Queen Mary is colossal. To step aboard this ship, she's 1,019 and a half feet, a fifth of a mile long. Gross tonnage is 81,237 tons. It wasn't until 1995 that a passenger ship was built to supersede the size of the Queen Mary and Queen Elizabeth.
What ship was that?
And, you know, I can't call the ship. I believe it was a Royal Caribbean ship, maybe one of their sovereign class. And so I know the Sovereign of the Seas came into service in 1990, and it was just a tad over 70,000 tons. And the Crown Princess, one of the Prince's larger ships, came into service. And I was able to sail on the maiden voyage of that, and did so because it was the first large ship to take to the sea, really, since the QE2 in 1969. But ships are being built bigger than ever. There's only one true blood ocean liner left floating on the seas in service, and that is the Queen Mary II, built in 2004. It's twice the size of this Queen Mary, but it's built with all the heavy-duty steel and Atlantic capabilities and 30-knot speed capabilities as well. Of course, they only operate at about 15 knots these days, but it's a fuel-saving measure. But this being Cunard's very first queen, I think is not only very important to the ship-loving public, but her part in her duality and war and peace and fair weather and foul, and as a living part of our culture here in Southern California, is a very, very important ship. Other things people can see is, as you asked, all sorts of artwork. I mean, over 30 artists worked on the art in the Queen Mary, and most of it is still intact and in place. So when you walk through the main hall and look around over the centerline boutique and see the 55-foot frieze called Sport and Speed, it's all original. You go in the observation bar, the cedar ma paneling, the Burma bright balustrading is all in place. The painting over the bar, the Royal Jubilee Week, it's all there for one to enjoy. If you check into one of the beautiful original staterooms that we have, especially the suites like the Churchill Suite and the Queen Mary Suite, the wood paneling is just as it was left on its final voyage, and it's just beautiful and it's spacious. It is luxury of another time, and I think the Queen Mary not only represents the luxury of that time, but she represents an entire culture, because perhaps she was built for the rich and famous, but she also catered to the common man as well. Being a three-class ship, there was tourist class for travelers such as teachers and other people wanting to travel to Europe, perhaps to find their roots. There was cabin class that was between first and tourist, that was not as stodgy as perhaps first could be, but not as basic as tourist. So instead of having bunk beds, you'd have a proper bed and, you know, a proper cabin. But surely the Queen Mary is a time capsule of all of those cultural legacies. And truly she represents a time that before airlines and air travel dominated the world. And I think that she will remain as a clarion reminder of that time and the fact that in so many ways, Britannia rules the waves.
And in fact, well, before we look at her future, because you were sharing some plans earlier about the future,
yes,
but I would love to hear one of the stories you told about the Queen Mother that you told the tour group.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, traveled in 1954. She went from England to New York in the Queen Elizabeth, and they passed at sea. And she did a three-week tour of Canada and the United States, a goodwill tour. And then on, I believe, November the 14th, she sailed for home in the Queen Mary. And Commodore Marr, who was staff captain at that time and was one of the commodores that I knew very well, told me in depth about her visit or her time on board for the five-day crossing, because he had been made by Cunard as her personal liaison. So he was relieved of all of his other duties except for looking after the Queen Mother and her party. Well, rather than enjoying all of the amenities that such a sterling ship as the Queen Mary could offer, Queen Elizabeth went throughout the crew, visiting with as many crew as she could, looking at their accommodations, learning what they ate and how they lived and how they were looked after. And there was one sister, one nursing sister, down in sick bay caring for a critically ill patient and wasn't able to make it out to meet the Queen Mother. And when the Queen Mother heard of this, she went to her suite and picked up her own sterling silver hand mirror with the golden royal cipher on it and went down to sick bay and presented the mirror to Sister Moy and spent time with her, visiting with her. That's just the kind of lady she was. I think that she was an individual that was very much concerned with her fellow man.
That's a wonderful story. The other thing that you said during your tour that I didn't know, Queen Mary never actually sailed on the ship that bore her name.
Oh, yes. Queen Mary wasn't a very good sailor and was prone to seasickness. So while visiting the ship at the launching where she released the bottle of Australian wine against the bows, you know, champagne is French. There was none of that in Scotland that day. But she was there present at the launching. But when the finished product was completed on the 25th of May, the royal family descended down to Southampton just 2 days before the maiden voyage, and most of the crew were sent ashore, and King Edward VIII had ascended the throne by then because King George had passed away, and he flew his own airplane into Southampton's airport at Eastleigh, and the Queen Mother, or she was Queen Mother, Queen Mary, the Queen Mother at the time, she came down and by royal train along with the Duke and Duchess of York. And, of course, their daughters, Princess Elizabeth and Margaret Rose, came along, and the royal family spent the day on board the ship. Queen Mary most enjoyed seeing the appliances in the kitchen and talked to the chef at length in his native French about all of the modern appliances. And the king, while watching their steaks being charbroiled, said, "Oh, we're going to get something good to eat," because he said that's the best way to prepare steak. And then after going down into the engine room, the king placed a golden sovereign on one of the Queen Mary's turbans to test for lack of vibration. And then Princess Elizabeth and Margaret Rose went along with the king to the children's playroom, where they slid down the slide over and over and over, and then Princess Elizabeth was invited to switch on a Mickey Mouse film. And believe it or not, Queen Mary's commemorative gift for the day was a large brown paper bag of Cunard rolls that she had so enjoyed during lunch. And of course, it was 2 days later, the Queen Mary would strike across the North Atlantic with all speed, and she was making excellent time and would have taken the Blue Ribbon speed title on the maiden voyage, but fog shut in over the Grand Banks on the last day, and Commodore Britton had to reduce speed to half. So she came in about 40 minutes behind the French liner Normandy's best time. So it wasn't until August that the Queen Mary would take the Blue Ribbon, and then the Normandy would win it back, but the Queen Mary would retake it in August of 1938 forever from the Normandy, and she would be the fastest ship in the world until the advent of the SS United States in July of 1952.
And you said that Captain Jones said, in addition to being fast, she was also a lucky ship. Why did he say that?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, the Queen Mary is known as being a very, very lucky ship. And, you know, seamen are superstitious, and that includes me. I'm a little Jonesy about certain things. But more than any other ship in the fleet, the ship was considered to be very lucky. I'm sure there were a lot of lucky instances along the way, but I can assure you one thing that happened to the Queen Mary could have ended disastrously. When she was traveling during World War II, an escorting cruiser came too close to the Queen Mary and was sucked underneath the bow of the Queen Mary, and the Queen Mary split this cruiser in half instantly, killing 338 men of the Royal Navy. And someone asked me once, "Well, Commodore, how is that lucky?" Well, the luck was is that that ship carried torpedoes and depth charges and a lot of munitions for 11-inch guns. Had the Queen Mary struck her in any other place, it would have blown the front of the ship off, and she would have been lost with 10,000 men. And that would have significantly altered the course of the war. Another time, she was blown aground while leaving the shipyard in the River Clyde. And the way she skewed, she was aground fore and aft. And as the tide was falling, it was starting to put stress on the structure. They knew if they didn't pull her off quickly, that she would break her back in the channel. And, of course, naturally, the good luck prevailed, and she was off and down to the tail of the bank and ready for her sea trials. In 1949, on New Year's Day, under the command of Harry Gradage, it was his first voyage as captain of the Queen Mary. He had sailed in many different capacities over the time, but this was his first voyage, and they called it Shoreburg, which was their customary call for picking up continental passengers. And in 1949, Shoreburg was still a mess. And the captain anchored the Queen Mary inside the breakwater because the piers were still too shot up to dock at. There were wrecks still in Shoreburg in the harbor. And so when the captain ordered the anchors to be brought up, Commodore Marr was chief officer then, and he was working at the anchor windlass. He said from the time he touched the lever, he knew the anchor was fouled. And sure enough, most inopportune time, a gale blew up. And soon the wind was gusting 80 miles an hour, and it had taken control of the ship. And with the Queen Mary locked in irons, Captain Gradage took one of the most valiant efforts ever taken by any captain. He attempted to take the Queen Mary out of Cherbourg astern and drag the anchors free. But the wind seized the ship and brought her around, and she came to rest on a pinnacle of rock on the Saline bank. And all through the night, the Queen Mary remained aground. And as the tide dropped 17 feet, the propellers were out of the water, and the bow was drawing 55 feet forward. She's normally drawing 39 feet at each end. And all through the night, they thought the ship might break her back. But as the tide rose and Captain Gradage woke up the next morning, he could feel that his ship was afloat, and he couldn't believe it. He was joyous. He couldn't believe the strength of his mighty ship. The ship was taken back to Southampton and dry docked immediately while the passengers were still on board. He only lost 3 passengers with that whole ordeal that decided to take an airliner instead. But the damage was a 12-foot section of keel plate that was damaged on the strongest part of the hull. So that's luck. The Queen Mary outlived the Depression. She outlived the war. She outlived the jet. She outlived the breaker's hammer. She's a lucky ship, and she will always remain that way. I think her luck is with her always.
Tell me about the plans for her now in the 21st century. There's some exciting stuff going on?
Well, there is some exciting stuff going on in the 21st century. The Queen Mary Heritage Foundation has now been formed. It is a nonprofit organization that is made up of key people in the city of Long Beach. It is completely separate from the operation of the Queen Mary and will always remain transparent, so that it will be able to raise money for projects like our museum and science center, which we plan to create in the former exhibit hall, which was originally a boiler room and an engine room and a generator room, but was dismantled during the original conversion to a hotel back in the 1960s. We've used it for the Jacques Cousteau Living Sea at one time, and then for the rest of these remaining years, it has been an exhibition hall. But the opportunity to put a world-class museum and science center where we can actually teach children some of the STEM subjects, and actually we add an A to it for art, STEAM, and how appropriate for the Queen Mary. So we have science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And so that's the way of the future for the learning curve. And it has become exceedingly apparent to us that the Queen Mary's future lies in the young people's hands. It's not in mine any longer. It's not in yours. It's in the future of the children. And that's the reason for the Lego exhibit today. This is a way that young people can grasp what the Queen Mary is. They can put it in terms on their level. And so we're actually rewriting a lot of our tours to 4th, 5th, and 6th grade level, so that when we entertain students here on board, it can be taught as curriculum. So that is the future of the Queen Mary, and I believe that the Queen Mary's future in California has never been brighter. The people that run the Queen Mary today, they are sensitive to the history of the ship. They're sensitive to the integrity of taking care of the ship. And granted, we have a long way to go, but it is what we'll do. We will win.
What if a teacher hears this and she says, wow, I'd love to bring my 4th grade class. I'd love to incorporate some of this into some of my lessons. How does she get in touch with you?
Oh, well, she can email me directly at everett.hord@queenmary.com. Everett, E-V-E-R-E-T-T-E dot H-O-A-R-D at queenmary.com. And I can certainly make sure it gets to the right place. Or she can also talk to our sales office.
As we conclude here, Commodore Hord, how can people best support the Queen Mary Heritage Foundation?
Well, the Queen Mary Heritage Foundation will be able to take donations. They'll be able to sell annual memberships and things like that. But the best way to support the Queen Mary is to do your business here with the Queen Mary. And then your support of the Queen Mary Foundation can be done in a lot of ways. And read about us in the paper. Let us know that you support it. Donations are certainly accepted on all levels, from personal to corporate. And so this will drive our museum effort. And also the Heritage Foundation will be able to sponsor restoration projects in the ship itself. And I think that is the greatest way in the world to show your love to the ship.
And finally, I promise this is the last one, but nobody's going to forgive me if I don't ask you for a ghost story. Queen Mary is rumored to be haunted. What do you think?
Oh, well, I have to report there is something about Mary. She's just slightly haunted. I've heard them speak, I've had them touch me, and I've heard them breathe. And there are many comments from guests staying in the hotel or even visiting or going on our paranormal tours at night that have had people touch them. They've heard people speak. And, you know, I don't think it's a negative thing in the Queen Mary. I've never had a negative experience. I've had some arousing experience because you certainly, when someone touches you or something touches you, you're definitely aware of that. And it's something you're not used to or that you don't understand. But I think that if ghosts are people that once lived, then maybe some of them return here because they were happy here. My personal thoughts on the matter is that we as human beings have so much human will within each of us that when we go wherever we're going, when we go, then there's some residual energy left of us. And I think that never goes away. I think that's just the human nature. That's just, I think it's as biological as waking up every day. It is what it is.
I have to wonder why people are scared of ghosts, because, you know, you're not scared of people.
Exactly. Like I tell my wife, be afraid of what you can see, not of what you can't.
Commodore Horde, thank you for your time today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure speaking with you, and I'm so delighted that you came down and joined us today, and I hope you'll come back and see us again.